Bellator Champion Series is back in action Friday, May 17th, live from Paris, France. Reigning bantamweight champ Patchy Mix defends his belt in a rematch against dangerous submission specialist Magomed Magomedov. And Cedric the Best Doumbé makes his Bellator debut in front of a home Paris crowd versus Jaleel the Realist Willis. Don't miss the action live at noon EST on HBO here in the U.S. And visit Bellator.com/watch for information on how to watch around the world. This is the very first time you'll be able to stream a Cedric Doumbé fight here in the U.S., so make sure you don't miss it.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Welcome back to The Fighter versus The Writer. I am Damon Martin. He is UFC legend Matt Brown. And Matt, you know what I just realized? I got this intro music I downloaded because it's like that, you know, the royalty free, you know, so you don't get flagged for like, you know, copyright issues. So it's just like, you know, that free music you can get. Laura Sanko, when she did the show a few weeks ago, she asked about like, she liked the metal music. She's like, that must be like Matt Brown's music. And I was like, actually, it's just some random metal sound. I was like, Matt does have a song by Jamie Jasta, but I was like, I'm always afraid to play it because I'm afraid we're going to get flagged for copyright. She gets Jamie Jasta to give us permission when we start using your song as the intro.
Dude, he don't mind at all.
Yeah, well, tell him, send me a message. Like, that way when we get flagged, we can send it to him and be like, dude, they gave us permission. Like, we can use this. So, yeah, I don't know why I'm asking you to do it. I talk to Jamie every now and again. I'll have to message him. I just thought about that. I was like, why aren't we using your song?
Yeah, just fucking do it, bro. He don't give a shit.
Yeah, you got your own. When you get your own specialized intro song from the singer of fucking Hatebreed, you better use it.
And, yeah. Yeah, you use it as much as you want, bro. Fucking badass song too.
It is.
Let's go.
It is. Yeah. Although I will say,
remember we used to use it, the Great MMA Debate back in the day.
We did use it for that. Yeah, never. I don't know. I always got paranoid because when I do a horror movie podcast and we used to use a track that was like an instrumental track, but it's from like a known artist, and we kept getting flagged, and so we had to like get permission and got like a specialized track to use. It was a pain in the ass. So I just stopped doing it. So I'm like, I just don't want to deal with the bullshit. Like, I don't want to deal with the like constantly getting flagged on YouTube and everywhere else. I just don't want to do it. So,
it's kind of weird how they do that too. Cause for instance, I have a TikTok, which actually my kids started it and they just use my name and my ID and shit. Cause they'd be like 13 and they just use my ID and shit. So I just stole it. They somehow built like, you know, up to 10,000, 11,000 followers or something. So I just took it back and I started putting all my guitar covers on there.
And yeah.
Yeah. So just for everybody's information listening, if you ever want to watch my guitar stuff, I upload more to TikTok than I do to Instagram or Twitter or anything like that. But anyway, so they flag like certain videos every now and then, you know, because like I play along with the song.
Yeah.
So you can hear the song on the video and it's like just every now and then some song will get flagged, like just randomly.
Which is weird too, because you can have music on TikTok, like they have like on Instagram too, like where you can use a song from an artist, you know what I mean? So it's like odd that they would flag you for playing the song when you can already play the song. So.
Well, ironically, the one that comes to mind first that got flagged was a Metallica song.
Oh, really? Lars Ulrich is just sitting around his house fucking with people being like, these motherfuckers, you can't use my Metallica song?
Yeah, he's just scrolling through TikTok like, who the fuck's using my music?
Dude, you remember, we grew up in the Napster era. No one today even remembers what Napster is. Like, seriously, like, I know your kids don't know what Napster is, but like, no one remembers Napster or LimeWire. Like, dude, those were like, that was the shit when we were growing up. Like, that's how you got your music.
100%. And Kazaa.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's right. That's right.
Still a Napster app, actually.
Is there?
Yeah, I actually downloaded it not too long ago. I think I deleted it, but it's basically like a Spotify or YouTube or Apple Music, whatever. Yeah.
it's funny because I used to work at, I worked at a record store in college. I managed a record store. And I remember talking to record reps. They told us how much it cost to print a CD. And that's when I knew the whole music. Now, don't get me wrong. I know musicians get screwed. I'm not trying to like, you know, I'm not siding with the man here over the musicians. Like musicians should get the royalties, especially with Spotify and Apple Music and everything else out there today. But he was telling me how little it cost to print a CD back in the day. And I was like, and you guys are charged like $15.99 for this shit? Like, good Christ. Like, that's why I stole music. I was like, I was a college student. I couldn't afford to pay $15.99 for a new record. I could pay free, though. You gave it to me for free. I'll do that.
It's funny. It'd be interesting. Like, whenever I do my own podcast, I'm going to have some musicians on. I'm going to talk to them about that because I've actually heard kind of differing opinions. I think it was Phil Labonte from All That Remains where he was talking about, he's like, yeah, you know, we don't get a lot for the streams, obviously. So in that sense, yeah, you kind of get screwed. But he's like, it's not, you can still make as much money as you did back then. He's like, there's another side to that coin because like now your music gets exposed to more people too, though. So you sell more merch and you know, get more people on tour. And it also leveled the playing field in a sense, at least somewhat, you know, where now someone can get famous on YouTube, you know, yeah. Like someone that, I don't know if you ever heard of Keith Marrow.
No.
Okay. So he was like, he's a great example of that. He did instrumental death metal for a long time. He's got a couple of albums with singing vocals on it also, but he did instrumental and just ridiculously good music, like insanely good guitar player. But he was like a hermit. He didn't want to be in a band. He didn't want to tour, none of that stuff. He was just a hermit and just like lived by himself and just play guitar. And then he made music for a long time before he ever posted to YouTube. And then as soon as he started posting a little bit to YouTube, he blew the fuck up, you know, deep in the metal world, you know, like the guitar players and stuff. And now he makes a living off of YouTube. And he's like easily one of the best metal musicians in the world. So there, I do think there's kind of two sides to that. Like, yeah, you know, the people kind of, I think in the mid range, like they get screwed the most, you know?
Yeah. But I mean, because when I used to work at a music store, the way I discovered new bands was when we would just get like, we would have record reps come into our store like once a week from Warner Brothers or Sony. We had record reps from every major label and they would come in and they would pitch us stuff. Now they knew like me, I was like the metalhead. We had another guy there who was kind of like an indie rocker. We had a girl there who was into hip hop, like whatever. And so they kind of all pitch us on stuff to play in the store of like, here, check this out. And if we liked it, we'd play it in the store. And inevitably on a much smaller scale, people would be like, ooh, what is that? Like, who is that? Let me check that out. And so, and they'd advise the concerts. Like, dude, I used to go, like when I worked at a record store, I was at a concert at least like three nights a week. Like I went to a lot of shows I didn't even care to go to, but they're like, you want to come in, meet the band, like hang out? I'm like, sure. So, like, that's how I used to discover music in college. Then when I quit the record store, like, for the longest time, like, it would just have to be, like, the most random shit, like, how I'd find music. But now, it's Spotify. Like, I'm on Spotify all the time. Like, they have, like, a new release calendar every week. And I'm like, ooh, what's that? Who's this? And I discover all kinds of new bands. I mean, that's, I'd heard of Bad Omens on our local radio station here in Columbus. They had played it. And I was like, oh, that's cool. And then I got into them. But then they blew up on Spotify. And I became like a massive Bad Omens fan. Now I'm like obsessed with Bad Omens. But yeah, like that's how I discover music now. Spotify. Like where else are you supposed to discover music at now?
Yeah. And you know, that's another great point too. Like a lot of these bands would never even been discovered, you know, like, of course, like you heard of Bad Omens through the radio. So they got a little bit of radio play and you kind of discovered them that way. Maybe you would have went and bought their record and went to their concert, whatever. But I don't know. I couldn't even name how many bands I've discovered through Apple or, you know, I don't really use Spotify. I use Apple, but same thing. I discover them randomly. And then, you know, the cream rises to the top. You know, there's a ton of them I discover on there that suck. Then when I find one that I love, I'll listen to it for a month. A great example is a band called Soen. You ever heard of them?
S-O-E-N. Oh, I love Soen, dude. I had their vinyl. I bought their vinyl when they came out. This is their new record.
Nice. Yeah, I bought like five of their vinyls because I was obsessed with them for a while because they're such amazing musicians. But if it was in a record store, I probably would have never bought the record. They're not getting any radio airplay. I would have never heard from them, never given them a dime. So even if they only got, you know, half of a penny or whatever from my streaming, that's more than they would have got otherwise, right?
Yeah, no, you're right. Actually, yeah, Soane, that's what you say. Soane's a band I discovered from Spotify. It was on one of those random like release calendar things, yeah. And I listened to it. And I was like, this is fucking badass. And then I went to my local record store. Shout out to Used Kids Records here in Columbus, Ohio. Best record store in the universe. I went there and their new release bad bin, they had Soane. I was like, oh, bought. Like immediately picked it up and bought it. Like I didn't know the album had dropped and I just immediately picked it up to buy it. And I was like, sweet. And that's all because of Spotify. Like I discovered them on Spotify. I'd never heard of them before.
That's exactly right. So that's what I mean. The kind of the cream rises to the top. And the, like I said, I bought like five of their records because when I first discovered them, I was them for like a month or two and learned a bunch of the songs. And was, these guys are fucking amazing. It's really not even my style of music, but the guitar is just amazing. And they're just ridiculously good musicians.
Yeah, it's funny to relate this back to fighting. Obviously, we know for years and years and years, the UFC fought against piracy and people, you know, stealing pay-per-views. And I would never do that. I would never steal a pay-per-view. That's just below me. I would never possibly steal a stream of a pay-per-view. But, like, they've kind of, I won't say they've embraced it more recently because they haven't. I mean, you know, of course, they're there to make money, but they've kind of embraced it. Like when, like I thought a great example of that was the Max Holloway Justin Gaethje fight at 300. That crazy finish, that final 15 seconds, and Dana White and you, every UFC account, like they all posted it online like immediately after it happened. They didn't try to hide it. They didn't try to, you know, say, well, it's a pay per view, so we can't put the finish out there. You didn't pay $90 to watch this. Like they just knew. Like they're like, if we don't put this online, everybody and their brother's gonna put this online. So we're just gonna embrace it. And now it's like the most viewed video in UFC history because they just said, fuck it. We're not gonna like let every other streamer on earth take it from us, and they're gonna put it up even if we try to stop them. Well, let's just embrace it, and then we'll put it up. And then guess what? 50 other million people put it up, and now it's like the most watched clip in UFC history in like 2 weeks' time.
You know, it's funny you mentioned that. Somebody, I forget who I was doing a podcast with a couple weeks ago, and one of their questions was, what do you think boxing could take from the UFC? Oh, it was a questionnaire with Dan Morley, a great, great follow on Instagram. Does tons of like the history of boxing, does tons of, you know, little like 2 minute clips about, like he did Roberto Duran is one I watched today, right? He kind of walked through his career and everything he does. Just a fantastic follow if you're a boxing fan or a fight fan in general about the history of boxing. And he asked me, what do you think boxing could learn from the UFC? And that was the first thing that popped into my mind was, yeah, their social media, you know, like they're using this Nina Drama girl, right? And like, I'm not a fan at all. Like, I don't enjoy watching her stuff, but I 1000% get why they do it, right? Like, it gets clicks, and she's good at what she does, you know, no hate or anything, but it's just not my thing. But the UFC is totally embracing, you know, getting more clicks, getting more views, getting more social media. And boxing doesn't do that shit at all. They're still stuck in the, you know, the 1990s.
Yeah, it's funny you say that. I was watching WrestleMania a few weeks ago, and Logan Paul was on, and he had some guy with him dressed in the Prime bottle. You know, he sells Prime, his energy drink. And the guy revealed himself, and he was some gaming streamer. Like, I care. I see something. I care. I know there's a band called I See Stars that I like. It wasn't I See Stars. It was some name like I See Shit. I don't know what it was called. Some name like that. I had never heard of them, and they're making a huge deal about it on WWE. And then one of the guys I work with has a kid who's like 12 years old. And he said, as soon as that dude popped on screen, his 12-year-old kid lost his freaking mind because he knew the streamer from YouTube. Like, you got to realize, you got to embrace that. Like, we all talk about, like, the influencer stuff and, you know, all that, you know, all that kind of, like, last week I interviewed, like, Paige Van Zandt is fighting an influencer on that Misfits boxing card coming up in May, and I interviewed her and her opponent. Her opponent's, like, an adult film star who does OnlyFans, but she's, like, insanely popular. Now, I'm not saying this because I'm, you know, I'm a dude. Of course, you know, I'm a dude. I'm not gonna say I'm not oblivious to everything out there, but I had never heard of her until she did Misfits Boxing, and then I was like, oh, okay, who is this girl? Who is she? Looked her up and found out, you know, what she was famous for. But like, you just have to learn to embrace. You don't have to love it. Like, I'm not gonna sit here and say I love watching influencer boxing or influencers the best thing ever, but. Dude, it works, man. It does. Because like I said, when that dude popped on screen, I was like, I pulled the Conor McGregor. I was like, who the fuck is that guy? And my coworker was like, dude, my kid just lost his mind. He's running around the house, like freaking out that his favorite streamer is on WrestleMania. Like, that's the world we live in now.
Yeah. We can say that okay, boxing is doing it because they're doing influencer boxing. But you know as well as I do, that's not boxing. Like, no, influencer boxing is its own genre, right? It's separate from the real box. It's not bringing fans to boxing.
No.
You know what I mean? Like no one discovered, Guillermo Rigondeaux because of fucking Jake Paul. You know what I mean? It doesn't go that deep.
And if
but
boxing,
the UFC is doing a great of embracing that, I think, right? And you know, you love that or not, whether you're more traditionalist, like I'm naturally more traditionalist, and you know, I don't know if I'd say if it's a character flaw of mine or if I'm just an old motherfucker or whatever, but you know, I'm always slow to start embracing these kinds of like new things, you know what I mean? And I think I'm you know, in the same spectrum as these boxing guys, right? Like, they're just slow to embrace this shit.
Yeah, I think if boxing wanted to embrace influencer boxing, they got, like, if they want to bring in that crowd, they got to put one of those fights on a card. Now, I know the old heads like Bob Arum are never going to do that, but like, that's how you would do it. You would put Terrence Crawford and Errol Spence, which is a fight that everyone is going to watch. Or you put on a fight, like, again, going into it, like, Devin Haney and Ryan Garcia was a pretty popular fight, but it wasn't the biggest fight in the world because Devin Haney's never really been a draw, and Ryan Garcia is a draw. But I think a lot of people had even kind of tuned out because of all his weird behavior, thinking he wasn't taking it serious or whatever. Like, imagine putting some influencer fight on there as like the co-main event or the third fight down. Then you might actually get some people who are younger to say, oh, let me stick around and watch the rest of the card. That's what you got to do. If you want to embrace the influencer boxing, like, that's how you do it. You can't, you know, because you're right. Like, they don't embrace it. They hate it. And I don't love it either. Like, it's like the least skilled boxing ever. But, you know, I mean, people care. Like, whether we like it or not, people care.
And I think that's one way to do it. But also, you know, again, Nina Drama is another great example. You know, like, having a silly reporter like that that's not even a real reporter, you know, because she does silly stuff. Like, there's really nothing wrong with that, even though I don't personally enjoy it, but there's really nothing wrong with it. Or, you know, there's a million other things you do, too. You know, it's you know, I mean, Ron Garcia, he was an influencer before he was famous as a boxer. You know, and a huge, huge social media following. So he's a great example of someone already embracing that. But also, you know, just the boxers themselves. Like, you know, the one thing that I think the UFC has done better than any sports organization in history is the way that they have promoted the personalities of the fighters. Like, that's why people, that is a huge reason, at least, why people get so engaged with the UFC and so, they become very attached to certain fighters. And, you know, it's because they expose, they magnify who you are as a person, you know, from the Ultimate Fighter, the behind the scenes stuff. And I feel like boxing and other sports, like, they try to do it a little bit, but like, they have not accomplished it even remotely close to what the UFC has done. And I'm not going to say that I know the way necessarily to do it, but somebody should take a deep dive into what the UFC is doing and how they're doing that. Right.
Well, I was going to say, well, the reality is that, like, when you come up with gimmicks to try to separate yourself from the UFC, and I would say, like, what PFL does is a gimmick with the tournament and the season and saying it's, like, a real season format. It's not. Fighting is not a season. It's not a baseball league. It's a tournament, and it's weird points that don't really make sense. And, you know, and Bellator did that years ago. They tried to run a tournament every season, and what happened? Disaster eventually struck. Some guy got injured. Somebody else got injured. And then you end up with two random people in the finals. And, you know, tournaments were fun back in the UFC days when it was a one-night tournament, when you had eight guys and they would all try to fight and get to the finals. That's impossible now because the amount of damage you take in one fight wouldn't allow you to do a second fight that night in most cases. But, like, it's a gimmick. The gimmick you should be going for is getting people interested in your fighters. Like, yes, you can turn on and watch fighting anywhere. Hell, I can go out to a bar on Saturday night and see a fight if I really want to. But why do I care? And you're right. It's the personalities. It's getting people invested in why they care about these fighters, why they care about that story, why they care about where they're from, whatever it is. The gimmick stuff, while I understand you're trying to separate yourself from the UFC, ultimately, people care about fighting. And if they don't care about your fights, and they certainly don't. Like, I guarantee you, out of all the PFL fans out there, and I have no idea how many there are, but however many there are, I guarantee you they're not sitting at home crunching numbers about how many fucking points a fighter scored to get to the next round of the tournament. They don't give a shit. They just want to see some cool fights with the people they care about.
Dude, that's so true. Like, people get invested in people get invested in emotion, like more than anything else, right? That's why Sean Strickland got so famous, right? Like he says some shit that fires people the fuck up, right? You either love him or you hate him, for the most part, right? And Like that's what works. You know, he says shit that pisses some people off, shit that other people love. And he's just one example. There's a million people like that. And it doesn't even, the interesting thing about the UFC is it doesn't matter what your personality is either. Like, they magnify it. You know what I mean? Like, you know, even like, but there's a million examples of guys that don't have exciting personalities. Or like GSP, right? Like his personality. And of course, he was a dominant champion, which goes farther than anything else. But, you know, like, we know his personality very well. And the UFC embraced it, right? They're like, this is the clean, you know, clean cut, well-spoken, nice guy. And he goes in and kills people, you know? Yeah. I mean, there's a million examples of this. And then, you know, of course, when you get the guys like Chael or, you know, like Sean Strickland, you know, the loudmouth guys, Kevin Hollins, you know, obviously it works even better. and that's what Floyd did. So
yeah,
he got people invested emotionally. Like, they wanted him to lose. Like, he was great at doing that.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's funny you say that, because, like, that's just, like, I just read an article today, and I don't agree with it. Like, in principle, I really don't agree. It actually bugged me when I read it, but I also understand it's the world we live in, because Paddy Pimblett was responding to all the call-outs he's had lately, like Bobby Green and Renato Moicano. One thing he said about Bobby Green is, he's like, yeah, it'd be a fun fight, but he doesn't really have any followers. He doesn't have anyone that cares about him, so he's trying to gain fame by fighting me. And I'm like, dude, Bobby Green's been around forever, fought everybody, been around. Like, that dude's a legend. He's fought everybody. But then I'm like, whether I like it or not, like, he's got a point in terms of, like, the world. Like, we got to remember, the world is bigger than our little bubble of, like, hardcore MMA fans. And more people probably do know Paddy Pimblett than Bobby Green. I hate that. I don't like it, because Bobby Green should be known by everybody. But he's not wrong. I hate that that's where the world we live in right now. But, yeah, I mean, listen, your personality will get amplified. You mentioned everybody but the one name we all need to talk about, which is Conor McGregor. Conor McGregor became a star, yes, because the UFC had a platform for him. But it was Conor's personality. People loved him. People were drawn to him. Yes, he had Ireland behind him, and that certainly helped, much like GSP with Canada. But ultimately, you still got, I mean, there's a million Irish fighters now. No one's even come close to touching Conor. Why? Because he has a personality people care about.
No, that's exactly right. And even touched on a little bit there too, where these guys, they get their countries behind them. Like, again, like, you rarely see that in boxing or kickboxing, you know, these other sports. It's so rare, or especially not in the team sports. You know, I mean, you kind of get, like, your city behind you, but, you know, does anyone really care that much? You know, like, you kind of, I don't know. I guess they kind of do, but, you know, but like in any other individual sport, like, you're not going to see guys with their whole countries behind them. like in boxing, you'll see a little bit from Mexico, right? Like they'll get behind like Marquez, they got behind pretty good, or Oscar De La Hoya, you know, like there is examples of that, but it's a very rare thing. Really, it's the Mexico is really the only time I can remember a country getting behind a fighter.
Yeah.
Again, the UFC's done just a fantastic job of promoting guys like that and getting countries behind right now, who might end up being their biggest star, Ilia Topuria. He's got Spain behind him, you know?
And Georgia. And Georgia. I mean, I know Georgia's not as big, but he's also Georgian. Like, he's got two countries behind him.
Yeah, there you go. So, you know, what a just a brilliant marketing strategy. I mean, we could talk all day about the, you know, fighter pay or and things like that, but you can't deny the fucking brilliant business that Dana and company have built. I mean, when it comes down to like just pure, you know, business and numbers and marketing strategies, I mean, they've done as good of a job as you could ask for from any business.
100%. And again, it takes cooperation from the fighters. You know, fighters have to put something forward to be interesting. And you look at right now, like the next level of that, like in terms of like regular star power, you look at Sean O'Malley, who is definitely a star and he draws a crowd. Dustin Poirier draws a big crowd. But you're right, Ilia Topuria might be the closest thing they'll get on an international level to Conor McGregor because he speaks well. He's an interesting, intriguing dude. He's a vicious fucking killer in the cage. And he has like two countries behind him, Spain being the biggest, of course, but like it's like the perfect combination of everything you have going for you. Like Ilia Topuria, I'm not saying anyone's ever going to be Conor. That's an unfair statement to make, but like the next international star who could potentially come as close to that would probably be Ilia Topuria.
Yeah, and I would argue, you know, Topuria could outdo Conor potentially because I see more longevity in Topuria and his style, and like I could see him reaching higher heights than Conor within fighting rankings in the UFC, you know. And Conor had the potential, I think, you know, to go basically as high as he wanted. But you know, I see Ilia defending his title more potentially. He's in, you know, a tough weight class. He's got fucking killers coming around him. You know, he's got a potential to be a two division champ. But he has a great style for it, great athleticism. And if he can outdo Conor in that sense, in his legacy, then he has every bit of a possibility of being a bigger star all around.
He could. And we got to remember, at the end of the day, star power matters, all that kind of stuff matters. But just like you talked about with George St. Pierre, people love winners. I mean, George St. Pierre was one of the most dominant champions of all time. Israel Adesanya, you know, Israel Adesanya had a very magnetic personality and all that kind of stuff. But why do people ultimately stick around? Because he's one of the best fighters on the planet. Like, there's a balancing act. You can't be super popular and have a country behind you, but suck ass as an actual fighter. Like, you still got to be good. You know what I mean? Like, and when Conor was at his peak going into like the Mayweather fight, after he had beaten Eddie Alvarez, after he had beaten Jose Aldo, like, he was on top of the world. Like, that was his peak where he was number one everything. He had beaten Nate Diaz, he had beaten Eddie Alvarez, he had beaten Jose Aldo. Like, he was on top of the world. And I understand why you take the Floyd Mayweather fight. You get paid $100 million. Of course you do that. I don't fault him for doing that. But I think that was kind of the beginning of, like, the downfall where he stopped being as dominant of a fighter. And then since then, he's, like, whatever, 1-3 or whatever, you know, in his last... And, of course, you know, he had the injury and things like that. And, you know, Khabib Nurmagomedov is a fucking monster that you know, he's going to beat pretty much... He beat everybody. But like I said, like, you're right. Ilia Topuria, like, he's got all the potential in the world to be... everything Conor was in terms of stage and in terms of having a country behind him and things like that, but he might accomplish more because he seems pretty devoted to fighting. But you never know. Like I said, dude starts making $20 million, maybe he loses his focus too. You never know.
Yeah, absolutely. He seems, from all everything we've seen so far, he's got the mission in mind. He's got the drive. He has his head on straight, and he's going to keep doing big things. But yeah, again, who knows, man? You know, you get the big enough paycheck and your head gets a little too big for your shoulders and bad things can start happening, that's for sure. But you know, everything looks great for him. And, you know, he's probably not the only one. We could probably think of other guys. I'm usually not good at recalling things too well, but there's probably other guys that have, like Sean O'Malley maybe, you know, if he can keep it up. I don't expect that he will. I think Merab's probably going to run through him. But, you know, if he beats Merab in convincing fashion, the world is kind of at his fingertips too. Regardless, the whole point is the UFC knows how to build a motherfucking star.
The Bellator Champion Series is back in action Friday, May 17th, live from Paris, France. Reigning bantamweight champ Patchy Mix defends his belt in a rematch against dangerous submission specialist Magomed Magomedov. And Cedric the Best Doumbé makes his Bellator debut in front of a home Paris crowd versus Jaleel the Realist Willis. Don't miss the action live at noon EST on HBO here in the U.S. And visit Bellator.com/watch for information on how to watch around the world. This is the very first time you'll be able to stream a Cedric Doumbé fight here in the U.S., so make sure you don't miss it.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, one guy who fought in the UFC and now became, I would say, a much bigger star outside the UFC, which is a rare instance. Doesn't usually happen that way. But Mike Perry did another bare-knuckle fight last night, knocks out Thiago Alves in 1 minute. And I love what Mike Perry has become, because it is so hard to leave the UFC and find success, not only because the UFC is the biggest promotion in the world, they are, but like being a veteran of there, whatever he had, 10 fights or 12 fights or whatever he had in the UFC, to leave there and then find more success doing something else. I'm not saying, like, lots of people leave the UFC and find jobs other places, go to PFL, go to Bellator, go to Karate Combat, whatever it is. But rarely do you become a bigger star leaving the UFC. And Mike Perry, dude, like, and I've said this to Mike personally, when Mike was in the UFC, he was a bit of a fuck up. He got arrested a lot. He was always doing stupid stuff and saying crazy things and just not, he was famous for kind of the wrong reasons as a fighter. And now, like, he's still a savage. He's still knocking people out. He's still amazingly fun to watch, but he's kind of got his act together. He's got a family. He's got kids. He's matured. He's just older, I think, is a big part of it. And, like, dude, it's so much fun. Like, as a journalist, I can't root for anybody. But quietly, I kind of root for Mike Perry's success, just because it's so cool to see a success story like that, because it is inherent. It is just incredibly rare to see anyone find that much success, much less bigger success, outside the UFC. And Mike Perry's doing it right now.
If you were to draw up or build a robot of a bare knuckle fighter, like, would it not end up just being Mike Perry? Right?
Seriously.
Yeah. I mean, like, he's just built for that shit, man. And he's doing a great job of it. I have my question. I didn't watch the fight, but I kind of questioned going in where Thiago Alves' head was too. So I don't think it's a huge surprise, that he beat Alves. In fact, he knocked him out in a minute. It is obviously pretty impressive, but Alves said that he came out of retirement, for the paycheck, and went straight back into retirement right after. So, I'm not sure how big of a win that is, but yeah, man, Mike Perry, he's carrying bare knuckle on his back now. Like, the I don't know who any of the other champions are. I don't know if Ben Rothwell, if he's a champion now because he beat Todd Duffy. I'm not even sure.
He's not, but yeah, you're right. Yeah, he's not a champion right now, but yeah, that's another one. Like, he's just a name. And I think that's like, in BKFC, you don't even need a title to be the biggest name.
Yeah. So I didn't even know that, and I mean, I don't know, like, do you know any other champions in BKFC?
I know most of them because I cover it. Like, John Dodson is their flyweight champion. That's a name I know. He's their flyweight champion. Yeah. Guy named Dave Mundell is their middleweight champion. Kai Stewart is this guy who's a featherweight champion. But again, Christine Ferreira is one of their women's champions. Britton Hart's one of their other women's champions. Like, they have names, but it's almost like their champions are used to promote the regular cards, and then they do these big mega events, and they bring out Mike Perry and Ben Rothwell and what they did with Paige VanZant. Like, you don't even have to be a champion. But I love that, because, like, they don't, you can still promote cards with the actual champions, and then you get names like Mike Perry to come in where no belt needs to be on the line. It's just Mike fucking Perry.
See, they seem to be another organization doing a good job of just embracing the world that is today. I mean, of course, they started later. You know, like real boxing obviously has been around since the, you know, early 1900s, 1800s. So, you know, of course, you're going to have old heads in there. But, you know, BKFC, like, they're embracing who they are. They're not trying to compete with other people. They're not trying to, make a, you know, bring anybody else down along the way. So I think it's really cool what they're doing. I think they're doing a great job of it.
Did you see the news that Conor McGregor is now part owner of BKFC?
Yeah, like, what a brilliant move, right? Not only by Conor, but by the BKFC to, you know, however they worked it out. I mean, that's a brilliant move. I mean, now they got Conor that's going to be promoting it. Who knows how?
Yeah, like, if Conor does nothing else than post about them on social media during every event and, like, post little videos of, like, yelling out fighters or posting the highlights or whatever it is, like, that's your investment. Like, dude, Conor McGregor has a reach that is unbelievable. Like, that dude, that in and of itself is worth whatever you want to call an ownership share. I don't know what else he's going to do behind the scenes in terms of helping getting fighters signed or injecting money into the organization. But, like, the fact that you would have Conor McGregor, arguably the most popular, biggest combat sports athlete on the planet, posting about your event on Instagram or posting about it on Twitter or TikTok or whatever the hell, like, that's a win right there. Like, that's just huge to have that guy promoting your events.
No, I couldn't agree more. That's exactly it. You know, he's going to be showing up to events. He's going to be having fun. He's going to be watching. I mean, he showed up to the one event before he was even an owner. So I'm sure that's when he was in talks with them and getting things figured out. But, I mean, yeah, who else would you want? You know, like, Floyd Mayweather is the only other guy that would make sense to have as a part owner. So, you know, man, BKFC's made some great moves. You got to be happy for that, man. And, you know, and it's, again, it's not boxing either. You know, it's not our traditional boxing, at least. And it's not UFC. Like, it's something completely new, which is cool. And I like that, you know, and it's fun to watch, man. It's actually, you know, and I think where a lot of people don't understand too is how much safer it actually is. Like, it looks terrible, but there's less concussions, there's less handbrakes. Like, who would have thought that, you know?
Yeah.
Like, at least the data that I've seen so far, that's the facts. And that's pretty fucking fascinating, you know? Like, they got a safer sport that looks more brutal. It's obviously, like, shorter times, which is, I think that kind of turns some people off in boxing, is how long it is. Yeah, so I think it's going to blow up, man. I think it's going to just keep getting bigger and bigger.
Yeah, I think, like, I know we talked about this before when the whole PFL Bellator thing came around, but I know BKFC is not MMA, but I kind of lump them in just because obviously some of their biggest fighters are from MMA, but, like, they're the real second, they're the real number two. Like, they're the real number two in terms of, like, eyeballs. They sold a ton of tickets last night. They kind of create those viral moments. Like, you know, I said, just like Mike Perry, like, they've embraced all that. They've embraced Mike Perry as a personality. Like, they've done kind of the UFC game plan with that. Like, they're embracing Mike Perry as a person. I let him go out there and be wild and crazy and go out there and put on super crazy, exciting fights. And they're following the UFC model, except applying it to a bare knuckle fighting organization.
Yeah. What was the one fight? I forget who it was, but it's like, the one round was just fucking insane, man. It went viral. I've seen it at least 3 or 4 times posted.
Oh, the Angulo fight, the former boxer, the champion Angulo, the dude who had a fucking crazy 90-second fight with his opponent. Dude was grabbing his hair and fucking punching him. Looked like he was getting knocked out. And then he comes back and fucking knocks him out. It was literally one of the craziest fights I have ever seen in my Jeremiah Riggs and Alfredo Angulo. That was the one.
There you go. That was it. And again, moments like that are what help get the eyeballs on the sport. And I don't know why, boxing. Yeah, I keep going back to that because I just hate the model that they're still doing the same things that they've been doing for so long. And it's been slowly going down. But then they have a big fight like Garcia Haney, or like obviously, you know, when Floyd was fighting, or, you know, when Crawford fights, when he fought Errol Spence and, or Tyson Fury. It's like, you know, they get like nobody gives a shit about boxing. And then all of a sudden we get this big fight and they're like, oh, we're doing everything right. We just made all this money. And it's like, you could be doing 10 times more.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Like, yeah, the Haney Garcia fight was big. Fury and Usyk's going to be big. But you're doing that 6-7 times a year. You could be doing it 10 times a year. You could be doing it 12 times a year. You could be doing it more than that.
Yeah.
And you're right, though. I think that's why boxing gets stuck in its ways, because they'll have that big Usyk-Fury fight. And like, see? Everything's fine. Everyone paid attention to Fury and Usyk. And then as soon as Fury and Usyk are done, no one gives a shit. Like, dude, I watched that Haney-Garcia card, and I was bored out of my fucking mind up until Haney-Garcia. That was one of the, like, it was just not a good card. I didn't know anyone's name, didn't know who anyone was, and the fights weren't good. I lost all interest. And then when they finally got to the one fight I cared about, of course I got juiced up and excited, but that's a problem. Like, you gotta build your guys. Like, we all, like, I don't know every UFC fighter now. I surely don't. And I'm not gonna know every UFC fighter on every single card, but there's gonna be like a Paddy Pimblett. He's not a champion. He's not even a contender. But everyone knows Paddy Pimblett. Like, you know what I mean? Like, there's none of that really in boxing. Like, you don't have anyone who's not a title contender. You don't know anybody in boxing.
Exactly. And even, but to exactly to your point, though, if you go down a UFC card, like, you're going to recognize at least like half the guys on, you know, a decent card. There's some cards nowadays where, you know, you're kind of like, I don't really know any of these people, which is fine. But on most cards, like, you're going to recognize at least half of the guys and not more, you know, on a decent pay-per-view card, you're going to recognize almost one side of every fight. But like you said, on a boxing card, like, I follow boxing pretty closely, and I was bored as shit too. Me and my son, I was sick as hell, but me and my son were staying up late to watch the Haney Garcia fight, and he was falling asleep. You know, my son loves boxing, was stoked to watch the Haney Garcia fight, and he's over here fucking falling asleep. And I'm like, dude, even if the fight isn't that amazing, if they do something to build up, you know, just show, like, who are these guys? Why are they fighting? What are they doing here? Where'd they come from? You know, like, is there any story behind this, or is this just two guys that want to be boxers like everybody else? You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, you're right. Every pre-fight boxing breakdown is always the technical stuff. And I get it. I understand. Like, I appreciate the technicalities of boxing. But, like, that's all they talk about. They're like, yeah, his last fight, he out-jabbed his opponent 10-1, and he has a great right hand. That all matters. I'm not saying that doesn't matter, but, you know, people care about it. Like, where's he from? He's from Puerto Rico. He's from Mexico. He's from Spain. He's from France, and he was the French boxing champion, and he grew up. You know, we can recite Francis Ngannou's fucking story, because that's how much they built him up. Like, he was homeless. We all know he was homeless in France, discovered MMA, wanted to be a boxer, became an MMA fighter, became a UFC champion, ended up going to boxing. Every casual MMA fan can recite that story, because we all know it. They built it up in Francis Ngannou's story. Now, do we know that he has the slickest jab in all of MMA? Not necessarily, but we know his story. People care about stories.
Exactly. Is that Molly McCann? If they put on a fight in Britain, in the UK, and she walks out, the fucking crowd goes nuts. Paddy Pimblett, the crowd goes nuts. These are guys that, like, Molly McCann's not even a fringe contender, right? Like, she's not, you know, Paddy Pimblett may never be a top 15 guy. I think he's got a chance, you know, but again, he's got a chance, right? Have you ever in your life seen that in boxing? You know, where an undercard guy on the fucking prelims that may one day be a fringe contender at best, that has no real, like no one really believes they're going to be a champion, and then the fucking crowd goes nuts for him. Like, that's unheard of. I've never heard of anything like that in boxing outside of influencer boxing, which guys are making a fucking shit ton of money too, and fans are getting behind. You know, these guys like Jake Paul, that'll probably never be a top 10 boxer. I think he's actually got, you know, he may have a chance. I don't know. I don't think so. But you know, regardless, there's no one out there saying like, dude, he's definitely going to be like a contender for a title someday. But guess what? He sells out the fucking arena.
Yeah. No, that, dude, you stole my answer. It's like Jake Paul is boxing's fringe Patty Pimblett. Like, people care about him. People buy his fights. People care what he does. But he's never going to be a contender, and I'm fine with that. Like, I know he talks a big game, and I applaud him for trying. I doubt he'll ever be that. I doubt he's ever going to be a world champion. I doubt he's ever going to be a top contender. But that's Patty Pimblett. Like, I don't think Patty Pimblett's ever going to be a champion. I don't think Patty Pimblett's ever going to be a top contender. But guess what? People care when he fights. People tune in when he fights. People buy his merch. People watch his YouTube channel. That's Jake Paul. That's what boxing has, and boxing doesn't embrace it. Like, boxing refuses to embrace that kind of stuff, and they just stick with, like we said, like, pure music, man. It's a big fight. Everyone's going to care about it. Great. Awesome. What happens next month when, you know, fucking the number 9 heavyweight fights the number 11 heavyweight? Does anyone give a shit? Does anyone even know their names? No. That's the problem.
Exactly. Like, Derek Lewis fights, like, a lot of people are going to watch.
Absolutely.
And, you know, what's he ranked? What, number 8, number 9?
Yeah, down far. Yeah, he's had a couple losses. He's like 9 or 10 now, I think, something like that. So, yeah.
Yeah, I would say he's between like 8 and 10. But I guarantee, I mean, he's not going to headline a pay-per-view right now. But I guarantee, like, I'm going to want to watch, even if it's just for the fucking post-fight interview.
Exactly. 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 Real quick before we get out of here, I want to ask you one question on this card coming up this weekend, UFC 301. Of course, I don't want to disrespect Alexandre Pantoja and Steve Ursig. It's a fun fight. And I talked to Anthony Smith. He's got a big fight coming up against Vitor Petrino. I love that fight as well. But I want to ask you, Matt, because you're a guy, I mean, you know the sport. You've been around, obviously been a fighter for so many years. Jose Aldo's coming out of retirement to fight on this card, and he's taking on a very tough matchup in Jonathan Martinez. And I think we all know what's going on here. Jose has one fight left on his deal. Now, the UFC gave him permission to go box, and he did do that. Like, he was doing that kind of on his own. They weren't bothering him. He was kind of doing his own stuff, but he had one fight left on his deal. This fight's in Rio. I think we all know the story. They're bringing him back to sell tickets and sell a card in Rio, and that's why he's coming back to a certain extent. I'm curious, like, what should we expect out of Jose Aldo this weekend? Because I'm a little afraid for him, because I don't know how much he's been training MMA since he put his focus on boxing. I mean, of course, at his best, Jose Aldo was a savage, and in my opinion, obviously one of the best featherweights of all time. But Jonathan Martinez is a quiet workhorse, man. That dude is nasty. He's good. He's a good boxer. Got great leg kicks. He's been active. I don't know, man. Like, I'm a little worried for Jose coming back for this one after not fighting MMA for like 2.5 years.
Yeah, I think it's a great question, and obviously it's hard to give a prediction on that, but I also think that Jonathan Martinez is a good matchup for Jose. It's just a matter of whether Jose Aldo is, you know, where his head's at. If his head's in there, I mean, I love Jonathan Martinez, but I think he's a pretty good matchup for Jose. If Jose Aldo's timing is there, his leg kicks are there, he does what he does, I mean, he's an absolute killer. You know what I mean? He's a very, very tough guy to deal with, particularly when he was in his prime. But I think matchup-wise, I do think it's a good matchup for Aldo.
Yeah, I think the real question is, what Aldo are we getting? You know, are we getting an Aldo who's coming back to fulfill a contract and sell out seats in Rio, or are we getting an Aldo that's coming back full force and he's going to look like the Jose Aldo who basically lost a close decision to Merab 2.5 years ago in a not very exciting fight? I mean, it wasn't like the greatest performance for either guy. Are we getting that guy back, or are we getting a guy who's just like, yeah, let me just do one more fight. Let me hear the Rio crowd one more time. Let me sell some tickets and get out of here. That's what scares me. Is he coming back for the right reasons? You know, I guess that's what I'm saying. Like, is he coming back? Is he coming back because he feels like, man, I just got one more fight. I want to go out on a win. I want to end my UFC career on a big note in my home, you know, in my home country in front of a huge crowd. And if that's the Jose Aldo we're getting, dude, I got no doubts about it. That guy's a legend. But it always scares me when a guy comes back from it. He was retired. He retired. He left the sport. And then just suddenly coming back, it always scares me. Like, are you coming back for the right reason?
No, that's exactly right. We basically both just said the same thing in different words. I mean, it's, you know, fortunately it is, you know, the right type of matchup for him. You know, someone's probably going to stand with him. It's not a Merab. It's not a guy that's just going to go in and shoot doubles. Yeah, yeah. So, again, fortunately, it is a good matchup for him. I don't see Jonathan knocking him out. or finish him at least. It's just a matter of if Jose still has it in him, and like you said, come back for right reasons, his mind's in it. It should be a competitive fight. And again, I think, you know, if Jose is where he should be for a fight, you know, he should be able to figure out a way to win. If he's not there, then, you know, and I don't want to discredit Jonathan Martinez either, because maybe Jose comes out, you know, the best Jose we've seen in years, and Jonathan still wins, you know, and we don't even, and that's where it's kind of a lose-lose for Jonathan, right? Because if he wins, it's like, oh, you know, Jose's on, he has one foot out the door. If he loses and he lost to a guy who's got one foot out the door.
So yeah.
That's kind of absolutely a tough situation for him.
But you get, I know why he takes it. Like, dude, it's Jose Aldo. Like, of course you take the Jose Aldo fight, you know? So, yeah, we'll see. It's interesting. Yes, this is not the most exciting pay-per-view in the world, but I said this leading into it, and I'll say it again now. UFC 301 is crawling, so UFC 300 could walk. Like, that's all it comes down to. Like, we sacrificed UFC 301 for the benefit of UFC 300 because, in reality, Alex Pereira and Jamal Hill should be headlining this card, and we'd probably be a lot more excited about it, but you know that had to go on 300. And listen, dude, 301's great. You got Islam fighting Dustin, 303, of course, with Connor coming back and Chandler. So you know we got one kind of lame pay-per-view this weekend, and then we kind of ramp back up in a couple weeks with the card in Newark. So you know I can live with it. You know, one bad pay-per-view every now and again isn't gonna kill us. UFC 300 still got me buzzing, so I really don't give a shit that 301's not the greatest card in the world.
Yeah, it is what it is. I'm still gonna watch. You'll still probably watch, and we're still going to enjoy it. And a lot of times these cards go under the radar and they end up being some of the best fights, right? That was my biggest scare about 300, except that one we talked about a little bit before. A lot of times, like, the most hyped up ones end up being the worst ones. 300 fortunately lived up to the expectations for the most part. And 300 was also, it was a hard to miss, right? With like a Holloway Gagey, for instance, like it's hard to miss on that fight. You know what I mean?
Yeah. They did right. Like I said, man, that card was incredible. And like I said, I'm fine with it. I have no problem if 300 was amazing and 301 is kind of mediocre. And you're right. Mediocre sometimes turns into great fights. You know, Steve Ursig's looked really good so far in his UFC career. Aldo coming back, that's always going to be intriguing. Anthony Smith and Vitor Petrino has some potential. I talked to Anthony. He's pretty fired up for this one. So, yeah, like, you know, again, I'm not, you know, it's not like I'm calling my friends, be like, dude, you got to watch this. But it's going to be, you know, you never know what you're going to get. I mean, dude, I was down on last night's UFC card, then fucking Alex Perez comes out and just deads Mateus Nicolau with a fucking vicious hook and puts him down in brutal fashion. I'm like, yeah, it wasn't the greatest card in the world, but goddamn, that finale was good.
I'll tell you what, Steve Ursig, I'm not going to sleep on him, man. I mean, Pantoja is really, really good and really has a way of finding ways to win fights. And is just able to, you, no matter where the fight goes, just keep it a fight, you know, and finds ways to put it into his favor somehow. But boy, Steve Ursig, obviously, you know, we're risking it being too early for him. Obviously, you know, this is a big fight for him, really quick. But man, he has some skills, though, and I'm actually excited to see that one.
Yeah, I am. No, it's a good fight. I think Steve's looked great. And again, I agree. Maybe it's a little early. I don't know. Pantoja's a monster. He's looked incredible since, you know, getting to the championship and, of course, becoming champion. The way he picked apart Brandon Royval was super impressive. So, yeah, I mean, listen, Pantoja's the favorite. He should be the favorite. He's the champion. But Ursek is incredible. He's done nothing but great things since arriving. And, yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It's just, you know, like anything else, it's not UFC 300. It's not even Mike Perry, Thiago Alves. Like, that was a monster fight this past week. And it's not that. But hey, they can't all be. And guess what? We get one kind of okay pay-per-view this month, and then boom, we go right into two next month. Islam Makhachev and Dustin Poirier, and then we got Connor coming back against Chandler. Again, dude, who's really going to complain? Yeah, ultimately, really, is it that bad of a deal that we're going to get one card that's not a blockbuster? No, I could live with it.
Yeah, I guess it depends on how much you value, $80, right? Or 70, exactly. How much you are these days.
But, exactly.
Yeah. You know, hopefully they make some sales and Pantoja or Usyk, you know, whoever's getting pay-per-view points. So hopefully they make some fucking money, man. Like you said, it's not, at least in America, it's not anything that's going to draw big. But hopefully, the Brazilian fans get behind it. They do a big gate and it turns into a big, great card.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right, folks, we're going to get out of here. We'll be back next week to break down some of what happens at UFC 301 and also kind of start gearing up because we got a big month of June coming up, of course, with, as I already mentioned, Islam Makhachev and Dustin Poirier, and, of course, Conor McGregor's highly anticipated return. New BKFC owner, Conor McGregor, making his highly anticipated return to the ring, or return to the octagon, I should say. Matt, what do you got coming up? Where can people check you out and throw some support your way?
I'm the Immortal on Instagram and Twitter at the Immortal Coffee. Check out Redwood Outdoor Saunas. Keep following me on Instagram, social media. See about all of those. And buy some damn coffee, man. It's the best coffee you'll ever have.
I feel like I got an idea of some social media I'm about to pitch you on after we get done recording. I'm going to pitch it on here because I don't want you, not to be able to use it and someone steal the idea. But I'll tell you about it after we're off the air here in a second. But, always support Matt and everything he does. And, of course, we appreciate everyone tuning into the show. Make sure you check us out on all your favorite podcast platforms, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and, of course, over on the best website in the world, MMAfighting.com. For Matt Brown, I am Damon Martin. We'll see you guys next week for another edition of The Fighter versus The Writer. Thanks for tuning in. We will see you then.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
The Bellator Champion Series is back in action Friday, May 17th, live from Paris, France. Reigning bantamweight champ Patchy Mix defends his belt in a rematch against dangerous submission specialist Magomed Magomedov. And Cedric the Best Doumbé makes his Bellator debut in front of a home Paris crowd versus Jaleel the Realist Willis. Don't miss the action live at noon EST on HBO here in the U.S., and visit Bellator.com/watch for information on how to watch around the world. This is the very first time you'll be able to stream a Cedric Doumbé fight here in the U.S., so make sure you don't miss it.